Stephen Jay Cannell is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell was just saying life is more complicated than it sometimes looks. One of the things that has fascinated me about you from the beginning, not only the Rockford Files and 40 series and all that, but in that more complicated than it may appear, here is this guy, Stephen Jay Cannell, who is dyslexic, who reads all the time, who's on the internet all the time, who studies all the time, and who writes all the time, and yet you have this, your brain works differently than some people's brains. Doesn't that twist for you make your work more interesting?
Well, you know what? I guess I would say, Paula, that I wouldn't have the career I have if I didn't have this learning disability. I believe that dyslexics tend to work off the right side of their brain, which is the abstract side, which is the creative side. We're more comfortable over there. They're now doing, I'm a spokesperson for IDA, which is the International Dyslexia Association. They're doing a lot of brain resonating now, where they're hooking people up and taking pictures of their head when they're thinking and it, or when they're reading. And we're now realizing that the language skills, which are generally processed in the back of your skull, at that part of your brain, in dyslexics are processed up forward, you know, which they don't understand why that is, but it's obviously not as efficient a place to be doing that. But now they're also saying, so if that space that normally processes language skills isn't processing language skills in dyslexics, what's it doing? And of course, you know, and there's some concern that we maybe shouldn't be trying to fix this because Einstein, as you recall, was dyslexic, and so was Edison, and so was Hans Christian Andersen, and so were a lot of other creative people, artists and actors and writers. And maybe that part of the brain that normally processes language skills is actually being devoted to abstract thought. And you know, so it's interesting to know that it's a condition that can really hurt you when you're in school because you're not able to spell as well, you're not able to read as fast, you're not able to do a lot of things as well. But you are compensating for those things, and so you learn to get along if you don't have too severe a dose of it. And then when you get into life, you find that you're using those abstract skills that you've... I was the greatest daydreamer, you know, in school you ever saw, and I could make pictures in my head and go away to other places.
Well, you told a story last time we talked that continues to fascinate me about your ability when you were in the principally in the movie-making business, the television business, about being able to keep an entire movie essentially in your head as it's shot, which means all the takes, not just the each of the scenes, but each of the 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 different takes, and be able weeks, months later to sit in an editing suite and be able to recall everything that went on that scene.
Yeah, I would say to an editor, you know, the best performance on her is on the Crossing 2 shot. And they'd look at their script because script clerks keep a list of every shot that's made on the scene, and they say, no, there's no Crossing 2. And I go, yes, there is.
Trust me.
No, there isn't. And I'd say, yes, there is. And we'd have these arguments, and I'd say, there's a wine glass in the foreground, you know. And so we would bet. We'd bet lunches, and I never lost a lunch. You know,
they
got to the point where they would never bet with me anymore. You know,
that source of income went away.
Part of why I say that is to go back to the Viking funeral and this business about, in particular, in this book, you're really looking at tobacco companies, which is something that's very easy to get across lines, and it's small, and there's a big market for it. It seemed to me as I was reading this, and you're right, it's a rip roaring good read, that your ability to see things somewhat differently probably serves us well as you look at these kinds of bigger issues. I mean, I don't know this, and you do. You are freer to think about things by virtue of the way your brain works, aren't you?
Well, maybe. I mean, I never have stopped to analyze how my brain works.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I get eurekas. You know, I'm sitting around, I go, oh, my gosh, this is how I want to tell this story. I didn't know when I was first talking to Bill Gately how I was going to do this story.
Yeah, but you were talking to Bill Gately. And see, that's what I think is so fascinating.
Yeah.
Here's this Hollywood guy who's talking to this customs guy.
And my guess is you, unlike most people, were hearing pictures.
I was hearing something I'd never heard before. I was hearing something, you know, it's like you hear somebody tells you something like that, and you go, Fortune 500 companies laundering Columbia, Come on. And then the more I listened to it and the more he explained it to me and he told me how it worked, you know, and I began to realize, my gosh, this could be happening. And then when he supplied me with source material, and at the beginning, I was sort of just like fascinated by it. But what was fascinating me was that it was information I had never heard before. And I read the paper every day, you know. I was surprised. Here's an interesting thing. This is a really interesting thing. I was in New York, started my press tour, and the front page of the Wall Street Journal had a story, and it was about heroin smuggling in a heroin laundry in Afghanistan. And the Taliban was using the heroin that was grown in the poppy fields in Afghanistan. The money that they got from that heroin, they were using to buy Sony televisions, and they were then smuggling those Sony televisions into Pakistan, and they were selling them in the black market malls in Pakistan. The same thing. Sonys were the donkey that were carrying the drug money. Now, in this article, the executives at Sony are going, they were actually going over and inspecting the malls in the black market malls, and they were saying, well, why are they over there? Well, they were saying, we just want to see what product is moving in
Pakistan,
in these countries.
One of our now bigger markets.
You know, and of course, they're claiming they don't know anything about it. And maybe they don't. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and, without the benefit of discovery motions and legal, but you know what? There is certainly something here. There's a smoke. There's some smoke here, and there may be a fire. And I just think our federal government ought to pursue this in a very aggressive way. And they haven't.
You're talking about willful ignorance at the very least.
At the very least,
if this in fact is going on, and the evidence
I'll give you an interesting fact. It's a tobacco company, and that will remain nameless, and they have a $10 million market in Colombia for legitimate product, $10 million market. Now, I get this from law enforcement sources. They have a $10 million market in Colombia. They spend $30 million annually to advertise to a $10 million market. Makes no sense, right? Until you realize that there is a $1 billion illegal market.
So then it makes more sense.
Then it makes more sense.
I am regularly struck, and the more I see of the world, the more I'm struck by this, at my commitment to what is often a delusional state. Now, this is the confessions time. But if I am committed to seeing something one way, then by golly, I'm going to see it that way, and I won't see that $1 billion market.
It takes compelling evidence to turn that around.
Well, are you talking about on the behalf of the executives in these companies?
Oh, I mean on behalf of everything. I think as a phenomenon of the human animal.
Yeah, we're good at denial.
The hardness of coming to grips with something you don't want to know is profound. And some of what it seems to me you're doing with your fiction is to say, couple of degrees, you got to at least consider.
Yeah.
Again, are you a closet journalist here?
Well, maybe I certainly am interested in maybe I am a closet journalist. That's probably an interesting analysis, Paula.
I won't tell.
But
well, maybe a few.
I did quote Bonnie Tischler in the back of this book in my afterword, who appeared before the Congress of the United States. And paraphrasing her, I mean, but the actual quote, I have the CNN, the C-SPAN tape of her before Congress, so I know that this is an absolute accurate quote. But the paraphrase of the quote was that it is very hard to know who inside of a major Fortune 500 company is facilitating the business of money laundering, and it is not the intention of the Treasury Department to arrest and send to jail the presidents of Fortune 500 companies. So what the Treasury Department, in fact, did was send out warnings to these people. and to these companies. And if you or I did this, we would all be in the big house, you know, because we don't have big lobbies in Washington that are giving money to political campaigns that are giving us juice that allow us to get out from underneath these prosecutions.
Two names come to mind that I'd like to broach when we come back. Gary Johnson, Governor Gary Johnson, and Richard Slotkin.
And we'll do that in just a moment. This is the Paula Gordon Show. That was Bill Russell. This is Stephen J. Cannell. We'll all be back shortly. Please be with us.